This is Polykill, where two men, outnumbered by their games and at war with time, undertake the quest of defeating their lengthy backlogs. Please adjust your seat and prepare your ears for the banter of your hosts, Jake and Travis.
Hello and welcome to episode 33 of the Collect Call. I'm sorry, why'd I say that?
Why'd I say that? That's not a thing that we're doing. We haven't done that in months. Why?
I have no reason for that.
Regroup.
Hello and welcome to the 33rd episode of the Polykill Podcast. As always, we are your hosts. I am Travis. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at TravPlaysGames, because I do play the games, usually the older games. Jake?
Yeah, you do. And this is Jake, the other co-host, and you can find me on the Twitter and the Instagram at TheMcAxel, T-H-E-M-C-A-X-L.
And together we are at Polykill.
There we go.
On the Twitters.
Indeed.
Man, so we came out with a new type of show for us here recently called Off Kilter.
Off Kilter.
And it was an opportunity for us to put ourselves out there a little bit, not just be the game-playing dudes we are here, but also people we are outside of that.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, we talked about a lot of music.
Mostly music.
A lot of the weird shit that I listen to, and to an extent, some psychology behind that, I guess you would say.
Sure.
Personal psychology, not academics.
As good as it could get with a few beers and a whiskey or so.
Yeah. And we talked about sports for a minute, so it was fun.
It was fun. If that's something you enjoy, let us know. If it's not up your alley, well, then here's another Polykill.
There you go.
So
there you go.
There is that. But we would like to solicit your participation with Off Kilter, so if you'd like to send us an anecdote or some story or something to kick off the conversation next time, please do that. You know, we receive emails from you and occasionally little messages here and there in random spots on the internet, and we do like hearing from you, so please don't hesitate to reach out. We'd appreciate it, and we'd like it.
Always.
All right, well, we got a lot to get to in this episode. Got a lot of stuff.
Yeah, we do.
First, recent pickups, games on the radar, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
For me, I as being the collector guy, I just picked up one crucial piece of the collection, Mega Man 6 for the NES.
Nice. Is that fairly rare?
It's not the most common of Mega Men.
Okay.
Now, Mega Man 5 is probably the most rare, sought after of the Mega Men for the NES. Six ain't that bad. Now, I don't know why. There is a reason behind 6 being more common than 5. Mm. There's some weird thing going on there.
Maybe a publishing deal or something.
Perhaps, yeah. But I finally did get 6, and that's the one I've been looking forward to. And of course, me and my friend Mickey like to run through the Mega Men when we get a shot. So that's one that'll probably get played sometime in the future. It's not on the immediate backlog, but it's in the thought chamber,
nice,
if you will.
It's in the pile.
Have you maintained your New Year's resolution?
I have. Bought nothing.
Good.
Literally bought nothing. Thought about it once. I texted you and you intervened.
I feel like your AA sponsor.
Yeah. And in all honesty, I never was 100%. I was just trying to make sure that you would talk me off the ledge a little bit.
Oh, was that a test for me?
It was a little bit of a test.
Oh, man.
But no, I saw some sale on Newegg. You get the Phantom Pain. Metal Gear Solid 5 for like $7. So I was like, this is a good deal. But I held to my guns, as it were. So far, so good. Yeah. Four weeks down, about 20 weeks to go on the no purchase plan.
Well, I was going to say, if you're going to break it, don't break it, first of all, in the first month and not on an $8 game. I mean, if you're going to break it, drop 60 on something good.
You think
really,
so?
Really. Really just dive into the shame pool. Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah, because
okay.
You're not going to hear the end of it. You don't want to not hear the end of that.
Like, yeah, that's true.
You know, just random $8 games.
Yeah. So. That's true.
Things on the radar. So there's not a ton still coming out right now. It's picking up. I mean, Resident Evil 7 dropped, and that's, you know.
Yeah, that's a big one.
Great acclaim, and a few other games. One that I kind of had my eye on, because Josh and I played the free version of, I believe, the second one that Xbox released on, I think it was Sniper Elite. Is that one that they released two or three for free? Well, anyway, Sniper Elite 4 came out, and those, you know, it's, they're not the greatest games ever made.
They're fun.
They're fun for with two people. I think they're fantastically fun. They have little missions where one person has to be on the ground and kind of infiltrate an area, and then the other person is a watcher with the sniper rifle support. And pick off dudes and support.
Yeah, that sounds fun.
It is a lot of fun, actually. Obviously, it's not. It comes out Valentine's Day. It's not one I'm going to pick up day one. I might not even pick it up within the next year. But it is a game that if it drops for free or gets cheap, Josh and I might consider actually picking it up because it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's at this point, especially this point of the year, I think that's kind of where we're at. It's like there's no must buys on anybody's list at the moment, but it might be something that you're like, maybe one day. At least it made me have a second thought about it.
Yeah, Resident Evil 7 is definitely close to a must buy, but I know that our friend Brian's going to get it,
right?
So I'm going to use him. Otherwise, though, that would be one that I might drop money for. Maybe not this early, but within the first few months, because it's something I don't want it spoiled,
right?
And I do want to kind of hop into it while it's hot.
Yeah, and apparently they're already getting ready to release first DLC for it next week.
Interesting.
Yeah,
seems so soon.
Yeah, I think I don't know what that signals, if anything. Is it like, well, is this game so short that they need to just go ahead and release DLC for it, or is it, hey, we've got everybody kind of by the throat, so to speak, let's go ahead and throw more at them and get them to spend more money? I don't know.
Yeah,
but either way, it sounds like it's doing well, and people are saying it's not a perfect game, but it's definitely kind of return to form actual horror game rather than action horror.
I think that's what fans of the series really wanted after 5 and 6 and a few of those offshoots, is to get something that was more isolated and more horror and less over the top, what are they, shoot them or jump the shark kind of idea, what I mean?
Yeah, I think that's the case, and I honestly think that the series probably wouldn't have taken the turn that it did if it weren't for things like Outlast and to an extent, what we saw with the demo that we got of PT. I really think that informed where they went with Resident Evil 7. I could be wrong, but it just seems like it to me. It's
that and a lot of probably outspoken fans.
Yeah, no doubt.
Speaking of those resolutions, because you said you've stayed on track, you're almost a full month into having not bought a game.
Correct.
How are some of your other resolutions coming along?
I graded myself on the red, yellow, green scale for some of these.
Okay.
So in terms of beating a large scale RPG, and I added a few to the list. Initially, I said Skyrim, Fallout 4, Witcher 3, but I realized I had a few more in there that I'd actually like to complete. The other ones being Dragon Age Inquisition, Divinity Original Sin, and Persona 4.
Those are massive undertakings.
Massive undertakings. And I'm not saying I want to beat all of these. I'm just one of them.
Yeah.
That's kind of my goal for the year. If I get to 2, that'd be swell.
Are you leaning toward any specific one?
Not really. It's just going to kind of be, I might dabble in them here and there, and just to see which one successfully confiscates my goat.
Okay. Confiscate your goat. Yeah. Well, you could probably confiscate a goat in most of them, actually.
In Skyrim, for sure.
Yeah. Witcher 3 have goats?
Probably.
Dragon Age Inquisition, you could probably find a goat.
I don't think there's any goats in Dragon Age.
Maybe.
I know there's none in Persona.
Yeah, definitely no goats there. Yeah. Fallout 4, no goats. No goatless. Goats. Yeah. Well, I hope you can confiscate a goat.
So, on that one, I'm red.
Yeah.
I haven't...
That's
on
like
the time.
The Bush scale of terror, like it's bad. Like you've not done anything on that.
Yeah, not even, winked at it, really. Beat more retro games. I have put in some valiant attempts at beating some older games. The Chip and Dale Rescue Rangers game on NES. I think I mentioned Kistra's Ring. I put in some time. And then I popped in some old Rare Replay stuff on Xbox One and tried to run through those. Rare just don't fuck around. I don't care if it's an 8-bit game or if it's, a 40-hour game. They don't fuck around.
There is that.
So,
well, we have Super Metroid on the docket.
We do,
that
and
we can
we're
tackle
like
at some point,
halfway through it, maybe a little more.
Mm. There are some few others out there,
but
you just got to find what works for you.
Where I have been with it,
sure.
So I put in attempts, but I just haven't beat anything. So I would give myself a yellow on that one.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah,
yeah.
As far as tracking progress, better. I'm in green. I'm doing a great job with that. Purchasing no new games for 6 months. Still green on that one. Obviously, with the two caveats of being if EA decides to add more to the vault in the EA subscription service that I'm in, then that's okay. As well as the I won't call them free games because I am paying for the service of Xbox Live and PlayStation Plus, but the games you get is part of that service.
Right.
I'm not including any of those. But so far, none of those have made their way onto my backlog anyway. So
fair enough.
Yeah.
Great.
What about you?
I didn't use colors, but if I were to, be a space shmup is red.
Okay.
Remember, I tried Darius Twin.
Daryl Darren Twin
for the Super Nintendo not long back, and I kept making it to the last level and getting wiped out. It's like 20 minutes to get to the last level, which...
That's not bad.
You know, for a... You know, it is rated as an easier space shmup, but, you know, I still wanted to get that notch.
The catharsis, yeah.
And you're basically fighting flying battleship fish. It's crazy town.
That sounds fun.
But, it can be at times.
I mean,
it's really not a bad game, but that last level's kind of cheesy, and it takes 20 minutes to get there, and then really, you know, I lose fast. Yes. So, kind of lost momentum with it. I haven't gotcha. Went back. I've played a tons of others, though. Like, I got my EverDrive for my TurboGrafx.
Yeah?
And so I was, you know, dicking around on, like, Blazing Lasers, which is a fantastic
game.
But the something's up with my card, or I don't know if it's the actual TurboGrafx, but I will occasionally get a freeze in the game. You know?
Yeah, I remember you saying that.
Yeah, so that's frustrating. So that has me kind of gun-shy about getting serious about playing one of the games. So basically, my space shmup resolution for beating one classic, at least, space shmup, I have not...
I would say you're in yellow on that, though. I mean, if you put in some effort.
Yeah, not since the last episode, for sure.
But for the year.
But for the... Sure, for the year, I've done a little bit of progress. Beat Ocarina of Time or Link to the Past. I won't tell you which one, but one of them... You know, well, I mean, I will tell you which one later, but, yes, you know, for now... one of them did get beat there.
Yeah, so green on that
yeah.
Rizzo.
Yeah, boy.
Because you said or, right? You didn't say both.
Right.
So yeah, you full, can almost check
green,
that off.
Full green line. Yeah, absolutely. Continue to attempt games on secondary platforms. I did do a little bit of dicking around with the Sonic Adventure for Dreamcast.
Yeah.
So that one's still maybe yellow.
Okay.
And beat more RPGs. Well, I kind of did that by greening out the other line. If you consider
it's true,
a Link, if you consider a Link game,
are you okay?
Well, I almost gave it away. Oh. I was trying to save it for a little later.
I had no idea. I mean, you looked that way. I thought like somebody came in the door and
you thought I'd seen a haint. Well, I hadn't.
Know.
I just I did beat an RPG-esque game.
There you go.
I'll say that.
There you go.
But play more in general? No, not really. But anyway, hell, that's our resolutions. We're doing all right. How are your resolutions going? And what happened last episode?
Let's check it out.
Previously on Polykill, the first true podcast of the year has Jake neck deep in Tomb Raider's lovely depths after completing the first Dishonored. Trav starts Wolfenstein, Old Blood, and completes Zexus and Goof Troop. Will Jake maintain his New Year's resolution to buy no games for 6 months? Will Travis finally stop pretending to be a Zelda fan and actually beat Ocarina of Time or A Link to the Past? Find out in this episode. Last episode, the fellas shared their favorite gaming music tracks as the topic of discussion.
So, adding games to the backlog.
Backlog.
Adding games to it.
Yeah.
Obviously not something you're going to be a participant in for the next 5 months.
Yeah. Now, I will say this area does give me a little bit of pause when I think about actually how it's worded. Not that I have to overthink this. It's my fucking show. I can make this whatever I want. But when it comes to
our
adding
show?
Things to the back...
It's our show.
It's my show and your show.
Oh, okay.
And together it's ours. But like in this situation, it's mine.
All right.
My point is that when it comes to adding things to the backlog, are we talking about actually acquiring games?
No,
you're
right.
Are we talking about moving them on
deck? No, you're right. And this will be something that we cover later in the show.
Yeah.
Because I have tons of games in there on my shelves that I've not added to my backlog.
Exactly.
But I would totally add it there if I was going to make a point to play it.
So in this case, I didn't put anything down here. So I actually haven't, though, added anything new to my backlog.
Right, fair
I haven't bought anything, but I didn't actually add anything to the list.
Sure. Well, I did.
Yeah.
Okay, so MAGFest, I bought some games.
Yeah.
If you remember way, way back to about this time of year, actually. Remember Snowpocalypse?
You got snowed in.
You spent a night or two at my house because... there was a lot of snow and nobody could go anywhere, and it just made sense.
It's a good time.
For some circumstances made it possible. I beat the original Parasite Eve from a save that was...
Ages old.
Nearly a decade old on a memory card that I was able to find.
It was crazy.
I said, you mentioned that you wanted to play it, and I was like, I'm going to play it. I'm going to beat it. And I did. Well, at MAGFest, I found the sequel, Parasite Eve 2.
Right.
And I picked it up, and I've since added it to the backlog, and I've actually put a little bit of time into it. And I guess I can go maybe in a little bit of detail about it here, since I have some other side quest action a little later on. So here we go, Parasite Eve 2. So if you played the first one, you know, it's made by Square. And if you play the first one, it is very much like a Square game. It's turn-based action. You kill monsters. It's mitochondrial. It's got a cool story. A lot of really, you know how Square does, really good cutscenes, especially for that time.
Yeah, yeah. Kind of like one of those. Good. Yeah, yeah. It's awesome.
I thought that game was fantastic. It only takes maybe between 6 to 8 hours, if you know what you're doing, to beat it. And the turn-based thing was really cool because you had, you know, guns, which was kind of different for, you know, it's not like Final Fantasy where it's magic and elements and occasionally swords and that kind of thing. This is all about, you know, kind of realistic modern time. It's based in 1997 New York. And so it's a turn-based game that seems modern. It's not, it's fantasy, it's science fiction. It's not really fantasy. Well, Parasite Eve 2 really changes it up. It kind of works like the original Resident Evil in that you have fixed camera angles, which I believe you did in the other one.
Yeah.
But you have fixed camera angles, but it's real-time action. So you're occasionally, you're getting boxed in. You're occasionally shooting enemies that are off-screen. It's not turn-based. Like, you have to, actively engage them and shoot them. And it's hard to maneuver because it's one-stick control, so you don't have the ability to turn your character and move them with two different sticks. You have to use the right stick to turn them and move them.
That's awkward. Yeah, it's
in a panic. Turn-based, it was fine because you had a chance to be tactical with it, but now you don't have that. There's a lot of things about it that are very restrictive. Now, I've made it decently far into the game, and I think it's okay. You know, it's still made by Square. It's still good, but man, not having that turn-based and just those controls, I feel like it did take a step back.
Yeah, maybe dated itself a little bit by doing
that. Yeah, I'll confidently say I don't personally think it's nearly as good as the first one, but
interesting.
I'm doing okay with it. I mean, there's still some good things about it. Like, some of the characters are creepy. The story's holding pretty well. I mean, there's some things going for it, but in general, I don't find it to be nearly as good as the first one.
That's sad.
Yeah.
But kind of expected.
Well, and also I have the third one, which came out 2010 or something.
Was
on
that
PSP?
PSP? Yeah, that's fairly recent.
Yeah, so
fairly recent.
Well, compared to late 90s PS1, sure.
That's true. Yeah,
but and I don't really know how it plays. I haven't looked, but
interesting. I'd be curious to see.
Yeah,
awesome.
But that's all for added to the backlog.
Yeah, there we go.
What did you knock off the old thing there?
Well, you've made some edits to the titles of what I made, but I'm not surprised.
Yeah, let's hear those. What we got?
We have now. I'm not going to just blurt them out because I like to savor these moments because I don't often beat multiple games, especially multiple games with, I guess, the size of these. These are
girthy,
sizable games.
Very girthy.
And this has been since the last episode. This has been a bit of an undertaking. So as you probably heard in the previously on, I did take a dive into Rise of the Tomb Raider, which you have lovingly edited to Rise of the Womb Raider.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thought these would call me back in high school.
Yeah, boy. But yeah, Rise of the Tomb Raider. Wow.
They didn't.
This game.
You gushed hard at lunch one day.
I am really high on this game. I really am. Mm-hmm. I really loved the reboot from 2013. Loved what it did in terms of tone and just controls. And yeah, it was kind of a blatant take on an Uncharted formula, but throwing Lara Croft into it. But this game just the scenery and the changing of the environments and the weapons and just the evolution, the continuing evolution of Lara Croft. And you kind of get this really strong arc in the first one. The arc is a little more subtle in Rise of the Tomb Raider, but man, that game goes from you being kind of like this vulnerable explorer to this just bona fide badass in a new kind of way, because you're fighting the elements, you're fighting wildlife, as well as enemies on multiple fronts, and cultures, civilization. Like, it feels like a real Indiana Jones game. Like, there's multiple cultures. It goes back to that being somewhat, I won't say science fiction, but that kind of weird, like, loose fantasy stuff.
Yeah,
that you used to get. It goes back to that. It's just great. I mean,
that's really good to hear, actually.
Really good.
As much as I really liked the first one, I mean, it was beautiful, and the introduction to Lara Croft, how she was just, it seemed like she was a student going on a trip, and then she, you know, she has to kill that deer at the beginning.
Right,
and
which is painful for her.
Yeah, and as a viewer and a player of the game, you put yourself in her headspace, and right. it's hard for you even, and you progress through the game or whatever, and it feels very real and emotional, and I like those things about it, but it also felt, and there were some mystical aspects, but...
It was light and kind of not explained.
Yeah, and exactly. But I played the, Brian and I had made a couch co-op session. Usually we do horror, but we decided to do the original Tomb Raider not long before that.
Nice.
Maybe 6 or 7 months before I played through that game. And of course, I'm familiar with Tomb Raider. I'd played it, you know, in the 90s and throughout, but I was very struck by how sci-fi the original Tomb Raider series was.
Yeah.
You know, and how very not the first one was. So I'm kind of excited to see some of that come back in. I mean, I don't know what it is, what it entails.
Right, and I won't spoil it, obviously, but it there's, you know, it centers around, you know, how the Indiana Jones movies always center around this artifact, want something sure. specific. And that's kind of how this game goes. It's like legacy of her dad, and along with, you know, her own motivation, and then just lots of, I guess, competing factions trying to get their hands on this one thing.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of fun, really, really, really pretty in terms of graphical fidelity and animation, and just environments are just unbelievably pretty.
And how long did it take you to knock that one out?
It was about 15 hours.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. You said you played it in like 3 5-hour sessions.
Yeah, pretty much.
That good, huh?
Yeah. I mean, once you start, you want to know what happens next. I mean, this storytelling is done pretty well. I mean, it's not an extremely story-driven game in terms of mechanics, but it actually, in a lot of ways, I was watching it. I was like, this reminds me of like an early Capcom game, like mm-hmm. when they started doing like cinematics and stuff, like some of the visual flair and stuff that they were using. It's like, man, this is making me a little nostalgic, oddly enough.
Nice, so, man.
Yeah, really good. Really good game.
Me and Josh finally finished Gears of War 4.
Yeah, you did.
Finally knocked that one out, and you knocked it out, what, maybe a month ago?
Thereabout, yeah.
And, man, just graphically for a moment, you know, some of the, and it was there throughout, but I noticed it mostly there at the end, a lot of close-up of the characters and talking and stuff like that, that I don't know that I've seen better facial animation or better just, you know, rendering in general in a Pixar movie or anything I've ever seen in a cinema than I saw in that game.
That's high praise.
And it's not like I'm a movie buff or anything like that, but I was very struck by how well done that stuff is. It looks really, really good.
Yeah.
The one complaint I had about the game, and again, attempting not to spoil it, is that I feel like it has a lot of momentum going up to the end, and then it just stops.
I think I said something similar when I on the podcast when I said I completed. I felt like it was just a long, decent story that sort of ends in a not anticlimactic, but it just feels abrupt.
It feels abrupt.
I wasn't let down by the ending, but it was just like, oh.
But it's also, you might think like, oh, that's okay. It leaves you wanting more. I mean, sure it did, but it wasn't like a cliffhanger. It left me wanting more like in a way where it was like, I wanted it now, and I was really disappointed that I didn't get it immediately.
Like you almost felt cheated a little bit?
Yeah, when I saw the credits roll, I was like, oh, that's it?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
That might be a small complaint compared to how beautiful it is, how sound the gameplay is, and just how well that the Coalition really dug in and made a really good entry to the Gear series.
Yeah. And something that I think Brian pointed out, our friend Brian, that just how seamless and smooth that launch was on two platforms.
That's a good point.
I mean, it just, there wasn't any stupid glitches or online crap or...
That's true. I shouldn't go understand.
You know, shit tons of patches and stuff. It was just, it works. You turn it on and it works. So that's fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, if you don't own an Xbox, I guess you can get it on PC, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, if you're like a fan of strictly Nintendo, maybe you've never owned an Xbox or you only have a PS4. I mean, I really think that's the one series, and that might be the one game from this generation that I can point to that says, like, you know, this is why, you're missing out on an Xbox because of this.
Yeah, I can see that.
I can't say that about too many games because a lot of them are cross-platform. Most of the great ones are, you know.
Right, right.
But Xbox, I think that might be their one gem for at least the last couple years.
I think for the average consumer, yeah. You know, I mean, they've got a lot of, like, you know, if you're into racing, the Forza series is probably
true
the best racing series out there now. I think they kind of stole the crown from Gran Turismo. and Need for Speed.
Sure. I mean, so, where's Gran Turismo been in the last 7 years?
Just yeah. dicking around.
Dicking. Out dicking.
Yeah, what would you beat?
Well, let's do you.
Oh, it was me. We were just talking about that. Battle Porn.
Yeah, that's what I wrote on your thing.
Battle Porn.
Porn.
No, Battle Porn. And to be fair, this was not a difficult game to complete. However, there is a story mode. Yeah. Still loads of fun, and it really makes me sad. And I can't overstate this enough how this game just got lost in the shuffle of Overwatch. Because they really are different experiences, completely different experiences. But, you know, people always say, well, I'd rather play Overwatch than Battleborn. It's like saying, I'd rather play, you know,
Mario than Zelda. It's like they don't fulfill the same.
Yeah. I mean, they're not the same genre, even. I mean, they're both hero shooters, if you want to call them that. But gameplay-wise, completely different.
Interesting. As an outsider looking in, I can't tell. So I think that's just maybe bad marketing on one of them. I mean, what do you think? Why do you think it's...
I mean, part of me thinks...
Why it is the way it is, man.
And this is me being maybe a little cynical, but I think there's this Blizzard fanboyism that basically whatever Blizzard spits out is, you know, gold and great, and people cosplay it, and there's tournaments, and it's everywhere, and people love it, and it's fantastic, and it's the greatest thing ever made just because it's got Blizzard's name on it. And I'm not denying they're a great company.
They do good.
But I think it's one of those things where Blizzard had a trajectory like this. Gearbox had a trajectory that was kind of like this. You know, they did Borderlands like 6 years ago.
If you're listening, he's doing different things with his hands.
Yeah, they're doing this. But I think Gearbox had kind of been on a bit of a trajectory where they hadn't necessarily put out their best stuff. You know, they released Colonial Marines. They released Duke Nukem. You know, the really only strong IP is Borderlands, and that sold a ton of units, but it's also, you know, from a generation ago. So I think it may be part of that, too. That
makes a good point. They release at the same time. I think that's...
Yeah, a week apart. Literally a week apart.
That's rough for one or the other. Yeah. It was going to be rough.
Yeah.
Being that they have that same...
flavor. I think they have the same flavor.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah. Flavor.
But I mean... Battleborn is an RPG, and from the base, it's a Borderlands-esque style game where it's a bit of a MOBA, it's a bit of an RPG, it's a bit of a shooter, it's a huge co-op experience. Mm-hmm. There's very little PvP stuff, which is all Overwatch is PvP stuff. So it's interesting that people think they're similar.
But you really like both. You're not downplaying Overwatch to boost up Battleborn. You like Overwatch too.
I like Overwatch.
You like them both on their own.
Yeah, because to me they're two different things. It's like I like cheeseburgers. I really don't. I like sushi, and I like mashed potatoes and gravy. You know, I like both of them. They're very different. I don't compare them. I don't say, you know what, this California roll is good, but it's nothing compared to them mashed potatoes grandma had Thanksgiving. You know, to me, they're just, I don't get it. Anyway, point is, I beat the game. It's pretty fun. Liked it. I'll play it more because
it's
still
cheap
a lot.
As balls right now, by the way.
Cheap as balls. Especially, man, they just did a huge ass update to this thing.
Is it Xbox where it's cheaper?
I think it's cheaper on PlayStation.
Is that right?
By a few bucks.
Maybe you're right, yeah.
But I mean, people, sub 20 on either.
Yeah, and you can find it for as low as 10, I heard, at one point. And that's somewhat a shame, but at the same time,
it is
a good excuse to buy it and play it if you see it.
Yeah, seriously, get it and play with me. I have fun with it. You know, there's like 29 different characters to play with, all very unique, and lots of skills to unlock and level up with. So, yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Hey. So, I beat a game that... you and a few listeners had really pushed on to me.
Yeah.
They said, dude, this is a game for you. We hear you every week or a couple weeks talk about all these old-ass games you play.
All these old 8-bit sons of bitches.
You need to play a new-ass old-ass game.
Yeah.
Is what you need to do.
Oh.
And you can see the old Meebo right here behind us. And even last week, we covered some of the music from this game.
We did.
Now, I love shovel music. And I told you this last week, and y'all made fun of me. But I loved it even more, having beaten the game Shovel Knight.
Nice!
It was fantastic. It was a great experience.
Yeah, it's a good game, man.
It is a really good game.
Now, I haven't beaten it, to be fair. I've gotten a decent amount into it. Decent amount of it, and it's on my list. It's on my backlog.
It's solid. It didn't take me long. I mean, I think it clocked me in at like 5.5 hours, but I feel like it didn't really take me that long. I mean, it certainly did.
Right.
But in my head, I didn't feel like I spent more than 2 hours on the game. I mean, that's just a testament to how maybe addictive it is,
sure,
in a sense.
Yeah, and this was originally released as a 3DS game. I don't know if you know that.
I knew it was in the Nintendo area. Obviously, the Amiibo.
Right, that helped.
Yeah.
But yeah. Yeah. So yeah. That it might maybe, I guess what I'm saying is that might be an attribute as to why it's a smaller game.
Sure. And now you can get it on everything.
Oh, yeah.
You can play it on your toaster oven. You can play it on a light bulb. You can get it wherever you want to get it. But I feel like you should. I mean, it's
a great,
it's really solid.
Mechanically sound, great music. I love the dedication to, you know, maintaining that very specific 8-bit era art and style.
A lot of references to old games, even musically, but also a lot of the tropes that are thrown in. Really cool, really clever. I think, and I really don't know how to word it, because I didn't find the game to be that difficult, though it is designed to be hard, but it's so well designed that it's... So it's possible. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, there are games out there that are tough, and they're basically, they lack refinement, which is why they're tough. This is just, you know, it's like, it reminds me of Meat Boy. It's just, it's made so well, and you know exactly what it wants from you, and
gotcha.
You just have
to
do it.
Yeah, it's a good way to say it.
There's one flaw with it that it could be on me. I don't know. I haven't Googled it, but when you're, you know, it works like DuckTales, if you've ever played that, when you know, you have the cane pointing down, you can bounce. You can do this on enemies in Shovel Knight. You can't just do it on the ground. There has to be something under you. If you're trying to bust down through bricks and you continuously bounce down with your shovel, to make your shovel not go down, I had to just spasm with the controller, or else it would just continue to go down and maybe put me in peril. So that was the one thing that frustrated me. It was like, I'm not down anymore. Like, I feel like if I'm not holding down, it shouldn't have the shovel down, but it would still do it. So, but maybe I didn't catch something in the tutorial that was like, you know, don't put the shovel down by doing this, and I just missed it.
Gotcha.
But I mean, I still beat the game having that issue at hand, so I mean, it's not that bad.
Awesome.
The final part of the game, though, is pretty intense. So you have to fight every single boss again in a row.
Yeah,
it's pretty awesome. Crazy. And I felt like every time I beat one was just like by the hair of my nuts. But it was a ton of fun, man. I really did enjoy it. I'm so glad that everybody encouraged me to play it. Did do that. And I'm looking for whatever Yacht Club puts out, man.
Yeah, they're putting out a sequel chapter to Shovel Knight. So
yeah. Like, it's supposed to be like a full game or just some DLC.
I think it's a full game. I mean, they're teasing it as a full game. I don't know if it actually is, but I think it's going to be sizable either way.
Yeah. Have they done anything else similar?
No. Yeah. No. I think that was their first foray. Now, I'm not saying that none of these people had ever made games, but I think Yacht Club, I think that was their first entry. And what I loved about the game is you can tell game lovers made it.
Sure.
And it didn't come off as like some, you know, pandering homage. It was actually a good game that understood what made old games great.
Well, that's something that kind of made me skeptical early on, because I've been told that I should play some retro styled quote unquote game before. And I've been like, this just isn't enjoyable. I can get the same experience with the games I already have.
Exactly.
But this was a new experience, but it was also made with a level of modern control that you can't get with a lot of those old games that really was, it felt like almost like a rhythm game in a way,
if you
got it down just right, which I really appreciated. So thanks again, and it was awesome, and I knocked it. I put it on the backlog and off the backlog in like 2 nights.
Awesome.
So good experience.
Very nice.
What else did you take downtown, buddy?
Yeah, this was one that I didn't think I was going to get to finish before this episode. However, I did. Last night, I dug in, got some homework done, and it was like 8:30, 9 o'clock, and I was like, well, you know what? Let me just pop in a little old Quantum Break.
Yeah.
Let's see what happens.
How long ago you think it was when we talked about you getting that? I wonder. I don't know.
Oh, God.
I don't have a stat.
Oh, God. I don't want to think about it. I'll feel old.
We were in this room, though, so it was...
Yeah. Still, I feel old.
Yeah.
No, I get it not long after release. Yeah. So it was released March of 2016. I would speculate May is when I got it. And I got it on sale for $30 as was my...
Did you take it out of the cellophane to play it this past week?
Yeah.
Wow.
Literally.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, interesting game. I really, you know... I was excited about it because I felt like this is something new and different, not necessarily gameplay, but like package wise, this is new. So I'll have to say, in terms of presentation and package and just kind of what they were doing, it really does feel new gen, next gen, future-esque. Which is something that I think is cool, because it does feel ambitious even when you're playing it, but it's a beautiful game. Like,
is that just graphically, see that? Or is there some gorgeous. Other things that point toward
a lot of it? Like, the UI is very crisp and clean and minimal, and it frees itself of a lot of gaming, I guess, baggage in terms of UI stuff. There's not a lot going on. Everything's sort of icon based in terms of like the powers that you have available, and color scheme is very not muted but very specific. It's not very colorful.
So is that next gen specific, or is that just like interesting design specific?
I think it's interesting, but it's kind of like that postmodern futuristic sort of style.
It gives you the vibes of the future.
And it's very like tries are really big in it, like little triangles. Like they sort of make up everything. Like anytime there's like a ripple in time, it's all things are shattering in triangles. Mm. So it's very styled. And then of course you have the TV show tie-in, which
How did that work for you? Did I mean you said we talked a little bit about it at lunch? Mm. Did it when you had to, you know, play the game and then long periods of time you're setting the controller down? Did that feel weird?
Not really. I never found it too alienating because a couple of reasons. One is even though the game does have a TV show with it, there still were a lot of in-game cinematics. So it wasn't like it was all playtime and then just this black and white shift to just movie. So like you would be playing, boom, you get a cinematic. You play more, get another cinematic, play more, get a cinematic. Then it's like, okay, this is the end of this act. Now it's your time to choose a path for this thing. You choose your path. Something happens cinematically. Boom. The TV show starts. So it's all kind of up and down at the same time.
You're just turning your controller off and just waiting for a while and taking it all in. Can you pause those?
Yeah, you can pause them.
You could.
Yeah, they stream. You can download them, which I wouldn't recommend.
They're huge, right?
It's like 75 gigs worth of video. But you can stream it. And obviously the choices that you make in-game affect the TV show or the version of the episode that you're going to get.
Right.
So that's pretty cool.
So what genre would you put it in? I mean, is it first-person shooter, first-person cinematic shooter? Has it created its own genre?
I mean, it's not first-person.
So I mean, I don't know anything about it. What would you call it?
I mean, it plays like Uncharted. It's a third-person action-adventure game.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you think it falls
very strongly in that.
Did you feel like the cinematic aspect of it worked really well, that we'll see more of that?
I don't think so. Because I don't think this game made a splash like they were hoping it would.
Yeah.
I wouldn't doubt if it didn't happen again, just because I think it could be done better. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
I think it could be pulled off a little better and maybe trim the fat a little bit. But it was definitely an interesting experience. And without getting too spoilery, it did something really cool that I just kind of want to talk about. And it's slightly story-ish, but I just want to talk about it. So I'm not going to spoil the game. I'm not going to tell anything event-wise that happens. But what they do is, in the TV show, most of the characters that you see never really make appearances in the game. Okay, mm-hmm. So like they're marginal characters, and not marginal as in expendable, but just they're on the fringes of what's happening. And they take this one character and make you care about him, and then he ends up being kind of a boss in the game that you have to fight. So I thought that was really interesting in terms of you get attached to this guy through a TV show and you understand where he's coming from and his motivations and his endurance and all that. And then it's like, now the character you've been playing for 10 hours has to fight this guy.
Wow, that is interesting.
So I thought that was really cool.
Did you feel like because you had to watch these episodes that you did attach to the characters a little better because they weren't you for long periods of time?
Maybe.
Because I could see that. Because if I'm playing a game where I'm me and I'm making my decisions the whole time, it's different. Like if I watch a show and there's a character on it that I like, I really begin to like and then maybe even eventually love that character and like really, you know, care about them to the point that I would make decisions based on what they, you know, their temperament.
Okay.
Do you find yourself doing that?
Not really. And mainly that was because I feel like if I say any more, I'm going to spoil it.
Okay, fair enough.
And I don't
fair
want to
enough.
Do that.
Well, we should all play Quantum Break and then meet back in 2 weeks and discuss.
Let's do it.
We should just have a spoiler cast.
I actually kind of want to do that for some games at some point. And just have a full on, let's dig in and
just
discuss.
Let
this.
It out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We should do that for like some Hallmark game. I don't know, Gears 4 or something.
Okay.
I don't know. It'd be fun.
Whatever. Okay, so if you're done talking about Quantum Break,
I am.
I did. So I beat a game that was on my New Year's resolutions.
Yeah, you did.
It's a game that I have put some time into as a lad.
Years ago.
I had never completed it. I had made it pretty far. Had never completed it. I have called myself a Zelda fan my entire life, mainly because of that original Legend of Zelda. That little gold cartridge that found its way into my home and never back to its original owner. Because
so you're a Zelda fan, but who's got the Zelda sticker on their laptop?
I don't know what he said, but basically, I sat down and decided I was going to beat Legend of Zelda, A Link to the Past.
Link to the Past. Now, this is the 16-bit classic SNES game.
Yeah. Often very high on lists, top five all-time games, and SNES games.
Arguably the best Legend of Zelda game. Arguably.
I would say arguably. I still like the original. I think the original had way more mystique about it.
It's because they couldn't fit anything in it.
Sure, but I think that's part of the charm. But, yeah. I mean, I'm not saying... I think A Link to the Past is 1.5 my favorite games all time and 1.5 favorite Zelda game. You know, it's right behind it. Mm. You know, if... And a lot of the reasons I love the original is nostalgia. I'll admit that.
Sure.
But this is a great game. It's very pretty, even though it's early SNES. It came out in 91, so this is early, you know, which is impressive. I don't have to tell people about it. Most people play it but me, right? But the reason I love it, I think, is because it does really, like, just the step that the franchise took between the first one and the second one, it was so massive, but they still were able to capture the best parts about the series.
Yeah.
And I feel like, and I've not played Link Between Worlds. People really praise that iteration.
And there are Link's Awakening.
Oh, on Game Boy?
On Game Boy. Now, did that come out before Link to the Past?
It did not.
Okay.
It was after.
It was okay.
I'm pretty sure. But, you know, there are a lot of things from that game that have been pervasive throughout the series. I could tell having played a lot of the subsequent, you know, top-down versions. Mm. Like the GBA versions and the DS versions. But man, that thing just feels like a swan song to me. Like, it's just so good. I feel like, you know, I don't know that Anama was involved with that one, the guy who eventually took over around Ocarina of Time. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Miyamoto's involved. He did the original. Like, it just feels like the perfect Zelda game. Like, if they could have stopped there and have been fine. Obviously, the rest of the games in the series are great, but I was really blown away by how good it was. You know,
I'm really glad you liked it, because it's been ages since I played it, but I always just have the fondest memories of, you know, wandering around and bombing rocks and cracks in the wall and going to the dark world and
that's really impressive, because they were able to fit basically two worlds on one
cartridge.
There's a lot in there, and I read online there were some tricks about how they did it. You know, they kind of tricked, you know, the just basically a palette swap with a few things here and there to make it possible, and it's really impressive.
Oh yeah,
what they did to get
great
that
music.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, the whole thing's great.
Great music.
I'm gushing and I'm kind of sputtering over my words, but I'm really proud of beating it finally. And it's not nearly as hard as the original one. That's probably another reason that I don't think it's as great, is because I didn't feel as triumphant having beat it.
Yeah, true.
But I beat the original when I was 10, and I still think that's impressive. So
it is.
It's great. I'm glad I beat it. And fuck yeah, Zelda, go nice. Zelda.
And New Year's resolution.
Yeah.
Booyah.
And that's early. I mean, I could still take on Ocarina of Time.
Oh, yeah, you got that.
And Mickey and I are still 18, in the middle of Majora's Mask. I got some Zeldas kicking around.
You do.
Breath of the Wild comes out later in the year. I just picked up the Twilight Princess HD version for Christmas, so I'm set with Zelda.
You're balls deep in Zelda.
That's whether Link likes it or not.
Deal with it, buddy.
Deal with it.
That's all awesome.
Right. Well, if you want to be balls deep in a business idea, it just seemed right.
Sponsor is probably going to appreciate that.
Yeah, he said he wanted to change the wording up for his...
There we go.
By the way, our sponsor re-upped with us, so here's the wording change. If you want to be balls deep in business and technology, this episode is sponsored by Cowden Technologies, LLC. Caltech specializes in building full-stack web applications utilizing modern technologies like Ruby on Rails and AngularJS. If you're looking to take your business idea to market, or you have a software need that can support your goals, be sure to contact Cowden Technologies for a free consultation. To get started on building and launching your concept, email sales@cowden.tech. That is sales@cowden.tech. And once again, thank you, Cowden Tech, for making our show a thing. Without Cowden Tech, we wouldn't have a sweet set and art and lights, and we wouldn't have a home. We'd be on the street. We'd be doing podcasts out of trash cans and shit.
Yeah, it'd be awful.
It would be awful.
Awful entertaining.
Yep. So if not for that Cowden kick, so we appreciate it.
Thanks, Caleb.
And we're back. So the long play.
Long play, girl.
Last time I said I would add Wolf and Puss Old Blood.
Yeah.
You still, and I haven't played it.
You haven't played it, but you played other things and beat them. So
well, I have, but
you
I
need
think...
to maybe figure out what your long play is what I'm hearing.
Well, I'm just not in the mood. Like, I played a little bit of it, and I was like, man, this is pretty, and it's fun. And
yeah.
I got to a part where I got stuck, and then I was just like, I don't really want to play this anymore, and I haven't really had the urge to go back.
It happens.
It does.
It happens.
It's to the point that I might switch up, maybe try something else long
come back,
term.
Come back to it, because you need to come back to it, because it's a good game.
Sure, sure. I have.
I mean, if it's not for you, then you're wrong, but that's fine.
Well, there's also the, what was the Lord of the Rings game? I'm sorry.
Shadow of Mordor.
Shadow of Mordor that's on there that I thought I would maybe play around in a little bit.
I will say that game does get a little sprawling and slightly repetitive.
I've heard that and I've seen it played. I really liked a lot of the rivalries and AI tension.
Nemesis.
You could get. I did like that idea of it. So again, it might not be something I even finish, but I did want to dabble.
No, you should. At least. You should. So. I think it'll remind you of Mad Max a little bit in terms of the way it's kind of put together.
That recipe. Well, so needless to say, I'm a little conflicted about the long play right now. I'm not really in love with the Wolfenstein game as it stands. At least right now, I'm not really attracted to that style of game at the moment. So
it happens.
We'll see. Well, we will see. We will see. That's all I'll say about it. We will see. We will see.
Okay. You sound a little defensive.
We will see what happens.
All right. Okay. So for me, long play, I was going to have Quantum Break still on here. Like, I made that edit this morning. That Quantum Break wasn't on there because I beat that game last night. However, I switched it up and Soma. Now, this is a game that came
Soma,
out
bitch.
At least a year ago, maybe longer, probably a year and a half, maybe 2 years ago, maybe longer, maybe 2.5, 3 years ago, maybe longer, maybe 3.5, 4 years ago. I don't really recall when it was released, but it is a first person. I don't want to say horror because I think that's overstating it a little bit, and I don't know a lot about the game, so I'm not exactly sure. But it's some sort of like atmospheric first person, slightly scary, weird, system shocky kind of game, and I'm really excited to play it.
Came out in September of 2015.
All right, so a year and a half ago. Mm-hmm. So I'm excited to play it, and I bought it on a PlayStation sale. I don't know, maybe a year ago, and it's just been sitting there. So I was like, you know what? I'm gonna play that next. So.
That's your long play.
That's my long play.
All right, moving right along to Side Quest.
Side Quest.
Games on the side. So Brian and I continue with a little bit of Fatal Frame.
Fatal Frame.
We got a session since we recorded the last episode.
Nice.
That game is scary as fuck.
Oh,
I don't care how old it is, and I don't care who you are. All right, so if you're taking pictures of a ghost that's coming at you upside down, that's crazy. That's crazy town. The game is starting to get a little harder. Like, if a ghost touches you, it takes like a third of your life.
Ooh.
It's tough.
Ugh.
They also have weird, like, there's some cheesy shit. Like, they can be coming at you and you can get a picture off, but and you can hit them, but they can still hit you, and it's really sometimes frustrating.
Okay.
But there was one solid fear moment. There was one good moment when Brian is playing that actually there were two moments with him, both of them outstanding. So one of them, there is a child ghost, and evidently what I'm starting to find out in this game is that the kid ghosts move a little faster. They dart a little more.
Okay.
They're kids, they got high energy. They got that sugar.
They got high C juice boxes in their pocket.
That's right. They got that Capri Sun, and this kid ghost is darting around, and I think it's like as soon as we start fighting her, we're trying to get where is she? Because you have a third-person view where you can see your character, and you can see a little bit around your character. So you can see when the ghosts kind of come in and out of view, around you.
Mm-hmm.
But you can also switch over to your camera, which is also your weapon.
Right.
So you switch to your camera, and you have this first-person view. So that's kind of disorienting if you don't really know where you are in the space. And so we think we get a glimpse of her, and Brian switches in the camera mode about the time like her face is like right up in the camera.
Ooh.
And we both were like, wow! And Brian starts just taking, because you take pictures to hurt the ghost, Brian takes right. pictures of fucking everything. Like 40 pictures get rattled off. Like of whales, trees, birds, the sky, nothingness. That was pretty funny and amazingly scary.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah, and then there was another one where actually the opposite thing happened where we tried to get...
You scared a ghost that much?
Well, no. But we tried to get a beat on the ghost, and
you know, you have to switch in and out of this third-person view and this first-person view pretty regularly. And we think the ghost is across the room because, I mean, it's like a long hallway and they don't typically warp, but this one must have. So we see it coming and he zooms in and we're like, huh, well... And we pan around a little bit, we don't see it, and he zooms back out, and it's fucking right behind him, about to hit him, and he sprints off down the hall, and that was another, like, we were both going, wow, 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 and just, like, you know, gibberish and fear scream. So
that's awesome.
The game, I mean, tons of great moments. Yeah, yeah, and I've, when you turn the game on, it says Fatal Frame, based on a true story, and immediately you're like, bullshit.
Bullshit.
And it's basically based on, like, one account from one of the developers who probably got drunk one night in downtown Kyoto, but... read a little further down, and it said the game was critically
panned.
Yeah, for its difficulty spikes near the end, so that might be something that we run into coming up. And I can already tell, like, the ghosts are starting to get faster, smarter, and stuff. And yeah, I can maybe see that being a roadblock at some point. Hopefully, we're able to overcome it, but we'll see. But what about you on the side? What have you been working on there, buddy?
So one game that I haven't brought up so far that everyone's probably like, hey, Jake, are you still playing Stardew Valley? Yeah, I am. Get over it.
Oh, yeah. You have a tendency to like gush about a game and then never talk about it again.
Yeah, so that's not happening. I played, I guess maybe a couple nights ago at this point and jumped in. It's still wintertime, so I'm still just doing a lot of mining, a lot of dungeon diving since, you know, not much grows in winter.
Fair enough. How long do the seasons last?
30 days. 30 days.
In game time.
30 days.
Really?
Yeah.
Like on a set clock or like your gameplay?
Your gameplay. Every time you go to bed, that's a day over.
Oh, I see. So,
yeah. Wait. So basically, you get up at 6 a.m. every day. And.
But how long does a day last?
I don't know exactly how long a day lasts. I know, like, I don't know what the time scale is, I guess.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, that's what
I don't know what
about.
The time scale is.
Okay.
I can tell you by the time, if I get up at 6 o'clock and walk to town, it takes about 40 minutes in game time. That helps nothing. So I always thought that would be fun. But anyway, still playing
that. How long
does
that take you in real time?
2 minutes, maybe.
So it's 1/20th of real time.
Maybe. I don't know. But you get a finite amount of hours per day to do things. I mean, you can do things. I think eventually at 1:30 or 2 a.m. the following day, you'll pass out. And then you'll have to get resuscitated.
Ah.
And then you wake up the next day with like half the energy that you should have after a full night's rest. So you can't do as much the next day.
Oh, yeah. Man. You still dating your salad girlfriend?
I am. I'm still, showering her with romaine lettuce and croutons. But anyway, still having a blast with it. I mean, it's just so fun, so addictive. And you just get in that planning mode, that open-endedness and that freedom where it's like, you know, I've had this quest that I'm supposed to find this guy's purple shorts. He's been there since spring, and it's winter, and I don't care, and I can still do it if I want to.
This fella has been looking for his poor shorts.
Yeah.
For months. He's written them off.
He has, but when I go find him, he's going to be ecstatic.
Yeah, man.
So, having a blast with that. And then I think my other side quest is probably going to be Metro 2033. I haven't decided 100%, but I'm kind of in the mood to play a shooter again. First person, because like if you think about it, I played.
It's a good time of year for it. It's cold,
you know,
and dark.
Exactly, that also helps. Battleborn's first person, not a typical shooter. I played through Tomb Raider. I played through Quantum Break, all of which are, well, both of which are third person action adventure. So
there you go.
Switch it up.
Cool deal.
Yeah.
Well, that pretty much does it for the side quests.
Side quest, girl.
So for this discuss topic, we thought it would be a good idea, because we've gone off on some discussions about voice actors, music, we had a big E3 segment, we did our hindsight, and...
we've talked about all kinds of stuff on this podcast.
We have talked about all kinds of stuff, but I thought maybe it would be a good idea to go backlog to the basics.
Yeah, baby.
Harken back to the reason why we have a podcast, which revolves around our backlog, and maybe for people that are first joining us, maybe in some recent episodes, get a better grasp on why we have these segments of the show.
Why,
like,
do you do what you do?
Yeah, like we have an On the Radar. Like we have a whole process of like games we're thinking about playing soon, games that we just played or beat, the games we're playing long term and the games we're playing a little bit at a time.
Yeah.
That's sort of how we have it broken down. So wanted to get back to the roots and see if maybe some of that stuff and the way we see it has changed since we've started the show. And I'm sure that they maybe have probably. So let's start with what goes into your backlog. What
video games.
And I guess it should be prefaced, or we should scale back to where and how do you maintain your backlog? Is it a written list for you?
It's a spreadsheet.
Now it is.
Now it's a spreadsheet. At one point, it was just amorphous. At one point, it was, I tried to do it on howlongtobeat.com. I didn't find the usability too great on it. And that's not a knock on the site. I'm sure less people use it and love it. It just didn't work for me. So I just resorted to a spreadsheet.
Sure. I don't use a spreadsheet. I strictly use How Long to Beat, but I often forget to add them. Like, I'll mention them in the show, and then I'll go to say I beat it, and I'm like, oh, I didn't fucking put it in here.
Didn't put it in there.
So, believe it or not, I'm a little lax on the analtude when it comes to physical writing it down. But I do have a general idea. But in general, and to move on to the question I originally asked was what goes in your backlog, for me, it's weird because I have a bucket list and a backlog. I have gone through and done research and determined, and I think we talked about this in an episode over a year ago, in that I went through and did or made a list of games for each system that I own, the hallmark titles, the must plays for each one, and said, you know, this is my bucket list. These are games that I intend to beat in this lifetime.
Yes.
Or at least play or dabble with.
Experience.
So, right. So I have that, and then I pull from both that and what I own and what I'm in the mood for to form my backlog.
So you have this interesting, maybe often shifting Venn diagram.
In a way, yeah. And I've thought about maybe just saying, let's just throw what's in the bucket list that I own right into that backlog.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's like having a really crowded backlog is depressing. I like it to be
kind of clean and manageable.
Well, I think manageable is the key, in that if it's not something I feel like I can achieve, or if it becomes too much, then what am I doing? Like, that's almost, I don't want to be stressed out by video games.
Exactly.
I don't want to keep looking at my backlog and being like, I got to play all of this.
God damn it.
But if it's kind of manageable, if like I've gotten to where I don't like to put more than 30 games in there. So if I beat like 3 games in a week, I'm like, I can only add 3 to the backlog because then it's just getting crazy down.
You're boxing yourself in a little bit, but that's okay. I mean, I think you have to do that to an extent, because, you know, I could easily do the same thing. I could easily be like, I want to play this, I want to play that, I want to play this, I want to play that. And then, you know, if I were to actually keep track of all the things that I said I wanted to play, or it crossed my mind that I should play, I would have a very long, unmanageable, unwieldy list of games.
Sure.
It would be overwhelming.
To be fair, a lot of my games that I want to play aren't Witcher 3 or Skyrim or Fallout. You know, they're a little more bite-sized, more manageable titles, so I feel like more of them is not a big deal.
Sure.
In a sense. But it also, in a weird way, it having added them to the backlog, the howlongtobeat.com list that I can pull up, in a way that's reminding me that these are games I wanted to play. Because, believe it or not, at age 31, I'll occasionally forget, like, I meant to play a game, and I can't for the life of me remember what it was.
I found that, and I don't know that this will come up anywhere else, but on my back, I found that what's helpful, because when I thought about, you know, adding Soma as my my long play for the next period. You know, I kind of forgot I had the game, honestly. And having that list in front of me was like, oh, yeah.
I want
to play that.
Yeah.
And I think that helps to, you know, kind of remind yourself of what you have and kind of also maybe cursorily.
Sure. No, I got you.
Make a judgment call comparison-wise, you know, like, here's this game and here's all these other games. Is there anything else in this list that I'd rather play than that? And kind of having it there in front of you is nice.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I mean, you can scroll through your libraries or whatever and see that, but I don't know. For some reason, it's just easier to have a nice black and white page where it's like, you have this or this.
I agree. And more to that is, you know, having that list, there are a lot of times where I just don't want to play any of the games that I've said I would or that I'm already in. Mm. Like if I'm in a game where I'm stuck and I'm like, man, you know, it's late. I've had this kind of day. I don't feel like tackling that right now. I kind of want a new and different experience.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, I could chip away at the backlog by pulling up that list and looking at games that I've been really meaning to get into. Or I can dick around and pull Goof Troop off the shelf and just beat it for no fucking reason.
Exactly.
So, I mean, and that's not a game I would have ever added to the backlog, but it got beat.
There you go.
So there is an opportunity for games that I don't set out to play or
complete
ever
or
wish to play that occasionally I just get a little curious, and I'm like, let's see, a little polycurious, a little polykill curious, a little polycurious, and I just pop it in, and I'm like, hey, look at there, this ain't bad, and I beat it, and then I end up talking about it. So yeah. There's a few different ways that a game can make it into my life.
There you go.
When you talk about your backlog, do you think about it in terms of games that you want to actually get the end credits for? Or just games you want to play? Like, I've been meaning to play this, or it's like, I need to fucking beat this. Mm. Or is it both for you?
It depends on the game. In most cases, it's both. You know, like, sometimes it's more aspirational than realistic. Like, when it comes to, you know, Witcher 3 gets thrown up a lot. But, you know, it's a massive game, but it's universally adored and considered, you know, one of the best games of the generation, of the age. And I just really want to know why, you know. And I know why. Like, I can mentally understand why. You know, it's beautiful, open world. It's very grown up, Game of Thrones-y, you know, toned, lots of conflict, lots of weird political stuff, and cool magic and combat, great characters, voice acting. Like, you know, I can look at a list that you would see on the back of a box and understand why it's a great game. But at the same time, I want to experience all of it, you know.
Right.
I want to take it all in. So it kind of varies. Like, there's some games that are maybe just experiences that I want to, like, a puzzle game, like, you know.
Or
like
Dear Esther, for instance.
What's that? Yeah, Dear Esther.
That's literally an experience.
Yeah.
And not to overuse the word literally, but in that sense, it is probably the most fitting term for the word.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And sometimes there's puzzle games or sports games or racing games where it's like, there isn't necessarily an end game here, like beating Forza Horizon 2. You know, that's not a huge feather in my cap. But just playing the racing game and unlocking the cars and seeing the scenery is something I want to experience.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. I think the scenery for a lot of games is the experience.
Oh, yeah. Or the mechanic. It could just be a mechanic.
That's true.
You know, like, oddly enough, a game that pops in my head is Excitebike, like on NES. You don't care about beating that game.
Yeah.
You care about, you know, jumping the ramps and landing and building your own track. It's that part of it that makes you want to play it. You know, it's not like you're conquering it and you're overcoming something. It's just like, I want to be in there and do that stuff.
Sure. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So that's, you know, when it talks about the basics of the backlog,
yeah,
it can be whatever you want it to be as long as it's games you mean to play. You know, for me, would I put something like Hearthstone or Rocket League on a backlog? Probably not. There's no end game there, but
right,
there's still games that I would play. You know,
yeah.
They might be games I haven't played and I mean to play, but they're more social, I guess, in a way, too.
Yeah.
So it's like, I can be talked into playing these any night of the week.
Yeah.
But they're not games that I'm setting out to accomplish, because my backlog is pretty much reserved for me. It's my own thing. If everybody else wants to play Gears of War 4 or Gears 4 one night multiplayer, like, that doesn't, you know, multiplayer sessions and unbeatable modes in games typically are not something I will set out to do.
Sure.
I just let them happen because it's going to depend on my friends. My friends are going to have to be a part of that.
Absolutely.
Backlog aspect. Yeah. Cool. That was fun. Next is, do you see, for you, because mm-hmm. for me, I've already kind of said this, but is there a difference between your backlog and your bucket list?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you have your bucket list kind of documented? Is that something you try to keep track of?
I don't, and it's actually something I'm thinking about doing.
We love lists.
I love lists.
And maybe throw a shout out to the Cartridge Club who had us do the top 100 list. That was a ton of fun, and it actually, I ended up adding a few games to my bucket list because of that list.
Yeah, and to be fair, when we're talking about that 100, top 100 games, mm-hmm. like, that was difficult for me, not because I wanted that list to be my list. I didn't want it to be me agreeing with someone else that this game should be on a list.
Right, yeah.
Like, I really tried hard to make sure it wasn't like, well, people love this game, I'm going
to
put it
on. But it's hard to do, is it not?
It became stressful in a way.
Because I'm like, I don't want to be judged for not having this on my list, even though, you know, the card
not the point.
Probably are not, you know, checking the username and looking like, this fucking schmuck put solitaire on his.
You did. But that's fine.
It's a game I put a lot of time into, me.
But no, I think that the bucket list, to get back to the question, you know, a lot of that are things that I wouldn't even necessarily find myself interested in playing style wise or genre wise, but something that I just like, you know what, people love this thing, or this thing was revolutionary, et cetera, whatever. It impacted somewhere and I want to play it, you know, but it's not necessarily something that I'm going to be like, all right, starting next, I'm going to play that game. You know what I'm saying? It's not like, it's almost like it's, what do they say? Dreams become goals when you put a date to it, you know, or something like that.
Sure.
I don't know. But it's like,
sense.
It's like those are dreams that I have to play those games.
That's a pretty weird
not necessarily
dreams.
Goals.
That makes sense. Yeah. And as I've already kind of hit on, my bucket list is a completely separate spreadsheet.
And I want to put one together. That sounds like fun.
It is a lot of fun. And I would like to, you know, I think it's something that I could still improve upon mine. Like I did a thing where if I cross compose a lot of lists or whatever, I cross checked a lot of lists that ranked games top 25, top 100, and I tried to pull from that, you know, as many that are so critically acclaimed. But then if it was something like a game that was a sequel and the original didn't make it, also add the original, because I want to see
the iteration and evolution.
Yeah, and people might be like, well, the first one's just fucking stupid and it's hard and you can't fucking beat it. It's like, well, I still want to dabble in a little bit.
Just to get the point of reference.
Just get the point of reference and be like, man, the second one is a lot better, because, I don't know, I feel like that's somewhat important. Like, maybe people appreciated that second one because it was so much better than the first one. Maybe by itself, it wouldn't have been that great of a game.
Fair enough.
So, those are some things, just some funny little anal things I did with my bucket list.
Versus backlog.
Versus backlog. And then the bucket list is not something I've ever detailed to. I think maybe I showed you the spreadsheet, but it's not something I really ever bring up on the show, because it's so... I'm afraid of... opinion for that, and that's something that I did my own research on and was like, this is something that I think I would enjoy and so forth. So but you know, maybe it would be fun to share the bucket list, which is like the backlog of life.
Ooh,
that's a Polykill t-shirt.
Backlog of life.
Yeah, that's right.
Backlog. That's probably loud, I'm sorry. Yeah, and also Persona 4. You need to play Persona 4.
It's on my bucket list.
Yeah, you should play it, though. You should put it on backlog, is what I'm saying.
It's on my bucket list. It'll get around to it. If we do the show forever, it'll get played.
Seriously.
Do you force yourself to play games because they're in your backlog?
No.
I touched on this earlier in the fact that I got nothing else to play, I'll look in the backlog and see if I can put a dent in anything. But if it's on my backlog and I have to force myself to play it, why is it on my backlog?
It's kind of like having food in the refrigerator. I'm like, I'm going to eat this because... I just want to clear the space in the refrigerator. I'm not hungry. I just want to clear the space in the refrigerator. So I'm just going to eat this whole pie.
I'm going to eat all of this sour cream.
Yeah. You shouldn't do that. And you shouldn't do that with your games either.
It's true. And that's a good point, because I have a lot of games, obviously.
Yeah, you do.
And as nice as it is to be able to just choose anything I want to play, at the same time, there's this small guilt of like, these should get played. You know, I should.
Yeah.
You know, I possess them. I should play them. And I do play a fair amount of them. I probably play, I wouldn't say more than most collectors, but you'd be surprised at how much time I put into the games on my shelf. Hmm. Like, I think, you know, if people are ever critical of people who collect things and that they're just hoarding, it's not the case. I really am in it for the experience.
Yeah.
And I don't really feel like I'm ever forcing myself to take on a new experience.
Mm-hmm.
I end up forcing myself to play games... Whenever I feel like I'm forcing myself to play games, it's usually a game that I've already started.
I do that.
To finish it.
Yeah. I agree. I kind of recently did that with Far Cry 3 Blood Dragon, because it's a game that I started ages ago, around the time it came out, but still never finished. And the game's like 4 hours long if you just play the main quest.
Mm-hmm.
But I still never finished it. So... you know, that's one that it's on my backlog and it's there and I've got to save and I'm just like, I just need to go back in there and get at this thing.
And occasionally the hump is, and it's like that for like something like Fallout or Skyrim, the hurdle that you're overcoming, your mental blockage is that initial 20 minutes you have to put in to figure out what the hell is going on.
What am I doing? And kind of get back in that frame of mind of like, why do I have all this stuff? You know, why am I headed here, et cetera? What was my plan of action at that point?
And once you get going, you're like, this is the reason why I enjoy playing the game. Yes. But it's just that, you know, the longer you let something sit, the bigger that hurdle gets in terms of like, I got to get back into this frame of mind and do this. And I know I had to do this in the game. I didn't really feel like doing that. And
it's like sour cream. You know, if you just leave it set for a while,
it tastes
better. Come back to it, you're like, this is kind of hard to get into. But like once you get to the white part, you're like, this is why I like it.
I got
to
mix in the water, the sour cream water that forms.
Exactly.
And then I can eat it by the spoonful.
How
do you organize your backlogs? We already touched on this, but you said spreadsheets.
Spreadsheet.
And is that you going to stick with that? Are you going to look into some other methods? The spreadsheet's good for you?
Spreadsheet's good for me. It's easy to manage. I have it by platform. So my columns are platforms.
Yeah.
And in each row is game.
Nothing wrong with spreadsheets. I ain't dogging them.
No, don't dog them. And I got like little, you know, calculators built in there, like this is how many games you have on this platform, and then when I beat one I just drag it over so that everything auto updates. And I've got a nice column where all the games that I've beaten is stacked up and they're all color coded so I know which platform that I beat them on.
So before you did all of this or you had that exercise, did you just keep track of them in your head?
Yeah, this show did it. Like I would go back and look at the show notes like, I beat that.
Nice, man.
So,
you know, on howlongtobeat.com, which
somehow doesn't sponsor this show.
They don't endorse this. I think a few people over there, you gave us some listens early on. I don't know if they're still around, but I really do like the website, and I have a little F beside my username for founding member.
Ooh.
I was, you know, I had no input on how the website operated, but I was there from the early
the Genesis.
Days. Yeah. 5 or 6 years at this point.
That's awesome.
I've been kicking around. And I enjoy keeping track of it on that site. And I do understand a lot of people, you know, it's not mobile friendly. It's because it's, you know, there's a lot of information there. Like it is.
Yeah. It's a database, essentially.
You basically, you know, surfing a database, and I've just gotten so used to it that I don't mind it a bit, and I totally get people's complaints, but I really do enjoy the way it's set up. And you know, it always has the games I want. It has, you know, statistics about you know, what people rated, if it's good or bad, how long it usually takes to beat it, and it's pretty close to what I end up doing. Even if it's off a little bit, that's, you know, if maybe I finished it a little bit ahead of time, like I did with, you know, a couple games. I think even
Shovel Knight,
I was ahead by like an hour or so, and I was like, oh, that's kind of cool.
Yeah,
you know, and then there's some, like, you know, they grade it by, you know, did you just beat the main story, or did you get main story and extras, because that's a little more time. Did you try to focus? Did you just do main story, or did you do some other shit along the way? Usually, I always check I did some other shit along the way, because I do. I tend to be like, what's this little side thing that's going on?
Let me go over here and see what's happening.
Even if I don't care, I just want to see what's up. Like, what is it? Is it fun? You know, stuff like that. So I really adhere to that website specifically for my backlog, and you can check what you're playing now, and it'll give you a little, I mean, it keeps stats on you. It does a lot of it for you.
Like, if you read a lot, goodreads.com is sort of a similar,
like a book backlog.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's sort of a similar service.
Yeah. So I really do enjoy that. And it's actually the only aspect of my gaming life that I don't keep track of in Google Sheets is my backlog. I let How Long to Beat take care of all of that. When it comes to like my bucket list or the games I own or the games I want or anything else like that, I have very extremely anally driven custom made spreadsheets that have VBA script out the ass, and they take 30 minutes to load, and
yeah, they do.
That is a whole different bowl of Rice Krispies. But this the backlog itself is howlongtobeat.com for me personally. There's some other ones, like if you remember the Collect Calls, we talked to Dave and Dan Goodrepair and Marcus, both guys I met over at completionator.com, which will organize your collection and your back. It's basically a How Long to Beat and a collection tracker as well.
Yes.
So it does a lot more for you. But there's a smaller community, so a lot of the data in it is not as
robust.
Not as robust as it is over at How Long to Beat, which is used by several thousand people. So this is not an endorsement for either site, but those are just two that I think work really well if you're into keeping track of the games you want to play and the games you beat
Yeah.
Which might be something we talk about a little bit later in the show. But
And I will say one of the things, because I'm looking at the subheading here on the organization, the backlog, is something that I did with the games that I have on my Xbox One, because it allows me to do it a little easier. PlayStation recently did an update that helps this some. It's just, for some reason, it makes more sense to me on Xbox One is the pins. You can pin games to the home screen. So
Was it last episode you mentioned this?
Maybe.
I believe it was, yeah.
Yeah, so I just got everything pinned out in terms of what I'm playing in what order, and then when I beat the game, I could just unpin it and watch that list shrink on your home screen.
Nice.
Yeah, it's fun.
Yeah, and like I said, I just keep just stupid.
Pin the cool ones.
Yeah, it's like, this looks good.
Yeah, I got
good.
Doom.
Yeah, check this out. I got Doom 2 for Xbox 360. I haven't played a lick of it, but I got it on there.
Yeah,
everybody
boy.
Comes over and looks. They're like, damn, you're into Doom 2?
Yeah, boy.
So, I mean, that could happen.
Yeah.
How do you decide, you know, you talked about the pins, but, you know, mm-hmm. Xbox One's only one platform you have.
Sure.
So, how do you decide, I mean, what you play next? Like, when we're talking about long plays and stuff like that, like, what is it driven by for you?
A lot of it depends on what I played recently, because I like to, it can go either way. Like, sometimes I just get in a groove and I want to stay in that groove. Like, lately it's been that third-person action adventure game. So, it's like Rise of the Tomb Raider, Quantum Break. I kind of want to stay in that space of having that a little more open experience and, you know, cover base, because, you know, Gears of War 4, which I played recently, is, you know, can fall in that category. But I think it's just the, it's either staying in the groove or breaking the cycle, one of the two. And it can obviously only go one of two ways, but it really just depends on where my head is.
Right.
And then sometimes it is just by, and I did this before, maybe Rise of the Tomb Raider. It's just like, I'll get on a platform like Xbox or PlayStation. I'll be like, here's all the games I have installed. I'm just going to start playing this one, see if it hits. Nope. Switch. Let's play this.
Really?
See if it hits. And then, like, if I get into it, I'm like, this is good, then I'll stick with it.
That's really cool. I mean, that's pretty noble that you'll... I mean, I feel like if I start a game, I have a compulsory... I mean, I have to put 5 hours in before I decide whether or not I hate it. Like, I don't...
Yeah, like,
We talked about this at one point, and you had a great analogy when you were like, I don't pay enough attention to what's good or bad for my body. I just... You're talking about, like, you know...
Oh, digestive health or something?
Well, something like that. You're like, I'll just eat something, and then I'll be doing it for, like, 10 years, and then I'll finally put it together that wasn't agreeing with me.
Yeah.
I'm like that with games. Like, I'll play it for a while, and I'm like, I'm really unhappy sitting on my couch right now, and I won't put it together. It's the fucking game I'm playing that's bothering me. You know?
I try to be self-aware about
I'm not good at that. Because, games. In general, like, I like video games, and I feel like sometimes I will play a game that other people like.
Thinking
I'm wrong, or I'll play it until I'm like, there's a good part coming. You know, there's something about this, and, you know, even if I'm not digging it,
just over that next hill, there'll be something awesome, and I'll be glad I kept playing.
Yeah, and I'm really bad, really, really bad. I mean, with old games, even like I played Secret of Evermore 15 hours longer than I probably should have, because I didn't like it from the start.
You just decided that you should play it, and
I got the guide, because I was like, well, maybe it's just too hard. Maybe I'm just too stupid to figure this out. And if you go on to Nintendo Age, who every year
also somehow does not sponsor this podcast.
Well, they put us up there. We were on the front page.
That's true. That was
on the front page of Nintendo Age. That was really cool. But you know, if you go on there, they do the every year they start a can Nintendo Age beat this entire platform's library of games, and they have this is another resource I use for games I want to play next, which is what I'm getting into. But they will assign points, you know, because it's kind of a competition in a way, but it's also a community thing. Like, when the community does them all, everybody's like, yay! But one person beat most of the games, and everyone's like, yay! And, oh, that's amazing. So, and it changes every year, because different people, they'll switch between platforms and stuff, and it's really, really neat. I really do like that aspect of it. But the way that they assign points, like Secret Evermore, for instance, is like a 1. It's like, it's nothing. Everybody beats this. And it's usually one of the first ones that drops out. So that's another reason why when I was playing it, I was like, everyone thinks this is easy. And they play it and they love it. And it's just, it's not for me.
Yeah. And that's something you got to be like me with Mirror's Edge. Like, a lot of people, Mirror's Edge Catalyst, the 360, or not the 360, but the most recent one.
Yeah.
People liked it. And they're like, this is a good game. It's a good game. But, like, it just did not hit with me. And I was like, let me just keep going. Let me just keep trying. It's like, no, fuck it.
Yeah. And maybe, you know, we're pretty much talking about why you should retire a game. But
it's
I wanted to go back to games you should play next real quick, in that I do use a multitude, because, again, I have a lot of games for certain systems, and when I'm like, what's the next NES game I should play? Well, I've beaten most of the hallmarks that I own.
Right.
Sans a few. But deciding on what to play next, I actually use the tried and true, every gamer's been there, GameFAQs.com, because they, if you're a member there, and I'm pretty sure you have to be a member for it to log your information, okay, but it has a system there where it's like, if you click on a game, and if you don't go straight to facts, FAQs, if you just click on the game, it gives a little poll. It's like, do you own this game? Yeah. What version do you own? Yeah. Well, how hard do you think it is? Like a scale of 1 to 5. Okay. Well, what did you think about, how long did it take you to beat it? Okay. And it asks you those questions, and then it logs it. And it's got like, you know, a lot of the games have several hundred, if not several thousands of responses.
Hmm.
It's a pretty decent poll. I mean, it's got a lot of power,
yeah,
1,000 responses. So I'm able to use that to say, in order that list and compare the difficulty of games and say, well, this actually looks like something that's beatable for me.
Okay.
You know, it's in that range of difficulty. Then I can flip over to how long to beat.
See how long it takes.
And be like, you know, how long is this going to fucking take me?
Yeah.
Like, is it easy, but it takes, you know, 12 to 15 hours? Maybe that's not something I want to do.
Sure.
Or maybe it is, you know. So those are some of the ways that I use public data,
yeah,
essentially found online easily. And a lot of times it is really just as simple as someone telling me I should play it, like Shovel Knight. Like, I did no research. People were like, you should fucking play
it. You should play it.
Like, you're right. I probably should. So
yeah, and I will not lie and say that I've never used How Long to Beat as a determining factor in what I play next. Especially if I'm like, I'll call it crunch mode, but if it's like, you know, 2-3 days before I know we're going to do a podcast, I'm like, oh, I want to beat something else.
Right.
And I'll just be like, all right, how long is this one?
You might not use it as a management tool, but you'll definitely use it as a resource.
Yes.
Yeah.
It doesn't help me manage. It's just like, I look at it and I'm like, oh, this one's 8 hours, this one's 12, et cetera. Here's 1 through 4, 3.5. Let's go with 3.5.
And it might not be the right time for you, but you can definitely compare it to other games and say, well, this one's a little bit shorter anyways.
Yeah.
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 That's fair.
So the next question is, what technique or tendencies do you have for managing multiple games going at once? So yeah, this is something that obviously we both do. You know, we've usually have a long play and then a side quest or two.
Is it fair to think that I maybe do that more, that I maybe balance more games at once?
Than I do?
Sure.
Yeah.
I feel like when you talk about a game, you're fucking in it, and I don't hear anything but that game.
That's true.
For a few days. It could be just be lifestyle or just in terms of, again, I have way too many games.
You do. And I think something could be said that, you know, you've mentioned before that there are tons of games that you play, and by I'm using the word play lightly, it may just be popping in for a second or two, that just never make it to this show.
Sure.
And that honestly happens with me to an extent. And it's usually during that experimentation phase where I'm trying to determine what I want to play next.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's like, I'll play Blood Dragon for an hour, or I'll play, you know, Metro for an hour, or I'll play Mirror's Edge for an hour, or
but you
whatever.
Haven't committed to it in any
I haven't
level.
Committed to it. I'm just playing it to see if I want to get into it. You know, it's you know, kind of a stupid way to just, you know, it's like, if they had a demo of the game, that's what I would do.
Yeah, well, demos
but
were
of
great.
Just actually spending the money for it. I feel like they're coming back a little. You know, Watch Dogs 2 has a demo out now.
Really?
So, okay. Like, maybe Watch Dogs 2 needs it.
Yeah, you know? Probably.
I feel like it's almost last ditch effort now, and people almost recognize that it's like, your game's not doing well, is it? You're giving me a free part of it.
Yeah, it's. Have you heard anything about that? By the way,
people love it?
Oh, good.
I mean, critically, I don't think I think it's another Titanfall 2, where, you know, the critics are like, "This is good. You should play it. It's much better than the first one." It kind of does what the first one should have done, and then no one paid attention.
Fair enough.
Makes me sad.
Yeah,
but when it comes to, like, I know we talk about being in games versus experiencing them. Like,
right.
Does that factor into a side quest or something like that for you, where it's like, I want to play this long game and beat it, but this one I don't necessarily care about beating? Or is it like you want to beat, you know, all the games on your list at the same time?
Yeah, you know, the damnedest thing is that I feel like I've always done this. I've always reserved my long play for anything that is a full $60 release on my Xbox One. You know, something that is a full Ubisoft, Bethesda, EA, full-fledged.
Gotcha. So you would almost say AAA at this point.
There you go. AAA release. Whereas SideQuest is typically reserved for some of the side retro stuff I play. Then, like you said, it's pretty common to just pop a game in, pop it out. I mean, every time I get a new game for the collection, I'll pop it in, make sure it plays, or I clean it or whatever. And sometimes I play it a little longer than the other ones, you know.
There you go.
And I end up turning it into a thing.
Do you find that your side quests or, I mean, you said that your long play, I'm using air quotes on that in case you can't see that over your iPod. Do you find that that usually is more story based and longer, and your side quests or something that are, you know, quicker? Or is it okay?
Yeah, this, well, in a sense. So occasionally I'll leave the side quest to be something that I'm co-oping. So it's not something that I can
do solo.
Yeah. So like I'm saving it for Brian coming over and playing Fatal Frame, right, or when Josh is available to play Gears of War 4. Or in the case of Parasite Eve 2, it's just a game that I kind of have going on. Mm. Like, you know, I just occasionally I'll feel like playing it, and sometimes I won't, but it's weird because I kind of feel like some of the times the long plays are kind of like that too.
Yeah.
So there's obviously not sometimes a side quest can be your long play for a couple nights.
Yeah.
It's not a finite thing.
Right. It's more about where we assign it, not necessarily how we play it, I think is a way to look at it.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sorry, you had a thought.
I was going to say, if it's a game that can be dabbled in and beaten with a dabble.
Yeah.
That's a totally
or a dabble
quest.
Or two.
Some games are just side quests, but some games could be both.
Yeah. It's interesting because for years, you know, even as a moderate youth, and I never have been too young, I don't know what that means. I would always, you know, pride myself on the fact that I would usually have two games going, and there was usually some stylistic or genre difference between them. You know, one would be an RPG, like I'd be playing, you know, Dragon Age, Inquisition, like the first one or something. And then like the other game that I would have alternate would be a sports game or like an extreme sports game, like a Tony Hawk or something. Like one would be like this mental commitment to, yeah, conquering this giant mountain of a game, and the other one would be like, I don't really feel like committing to that right now, so I just want to hop in and do some kickflips and get a high score.
Fair enough.
And
yeah,
that still happens. That's why Stardew Valley is still my side quest, even though I still do play it a lot. Mm. It's because it is open ended and it's mechanic driven.
It's more relaxed too.
More relaxing. So it's not like I don't feel any pressure to beat this game. I just feel the desire to play it.
That makes a lot of sense, actually. Yeah, that's a good differentiator.
Yeah,
I try. Yeah. But in terms of balancing, basically, it boils down to my mood. You know?
Yeah, awesome. Yeah,
I mean, it really does.
Also with me.
When should you retire a game, though? So we talked about, you know, Secret of Evermore wasn't fun anymore. Mirror's Edge Catalyst wasn't fun anymore.
Right.
Is that the crux?
I think so. Like, I never will play a game just so I can say I beat it. You know, I want to play the game because I want to play the game. You know, I want to put in the effort based on my enthusiasm for finding out what happens or experiencing the story or to be able to have a conversation or be able to check something off on a bucket list. I don't want to just like, I got this game for free and I got to beat it. You know, it's not what I want my experience to be like. I got a thousand other things in life that do that to me. I don't want that to be the game.
Yeah. I'm a little different in the sense that there are some games I've beaten just to say I've beaten them. For instance, you know, Super Mario Bros. I kind of just hunkered down and said, it's time. Let's just fucking do this.
I also feel like that's a bucket list thing.
In a way, but, you know, Contra was the same way. It was kind of like, I should fucking beat this. There's a lot of games like that where it's just like
Street Cred?
That, but it's also like a mission. It's like, okay, it's like I
go
gotta
on to get
this
groceries or something.
And that challenge itself is fun. Even if the game's kicking my ass and it's hard and it takes me hours to learn it.
A meta challenge where it's like,
in a sense,
I don't really care about the game, but I need to focus and beat this game.
But also, I feel like in those instances, the euphoria of beating the game has been higher than some other games that I've played that I've actually enjoyed.
Okay.
So, I mean, it really just depends. Have you ever retired a game because it's too difficult?
Yeah. And I think in terms of difficulty, not necessarily like if a game's designed to be difficult, like a Dark Souls or a Mega Man or something, but a game that is just shitty.
Yeah, that's...
I'll retire those in a heartbeat. I don't have a problem with that. Like, if the game does not play well because it's just, you know, incomplete, then that's fine.
When it comes to, like, classic games, I will... Like, I do a fair amount of homework before I even start them.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to end up playing a game that traps me into really shitty difficulty.
Yeah.
So I haven't ran into that problem, but I'm also maybe irrationally afraid of running into it to where I stay away from certain titles because I'm like, that's probably too hard.
And I wouldn't make it.
I don't want to, you know, I only have 15 NES controllers. I can't stand to break one of them. So there is that. What about a game that's just been so long since you played it last? Like, has it been, you played a little bit, it's been on your backlog, and you're like, yeah, I touched on it. I put a few hours into it, but it's been so long since I've played it. I'll just, fuck it. Just retire it.
I think that's happened. Like, I recall having that sentiment. I think it depends on, you know, obviously how long it's been and how much time I put into it. And if there has been an experience that I could have that is similar but better.
Sure. It was like an upgraded version of this out. Yeah. That makes sense.
So the answer is, I guess, yes, probably.
I can't actually recall it ever happening, but... you know, like, if it didn't happen with Parasite Eve, it probably hasn't happened with me.
That's true. Like, I mean, I feel like it's kind of happening with Final Fantasy VII.
Yeah.
It's kind of happening there.
And that's another, I'm just afraid to start it because I'm like, it's going to end bad. I'm saved in a bad spot. I'm in a pickle.
Ugh.
All right, last thing before we go out. As host of a podcast about the journey towards slaying the backlog, how has your backlog philosophy evolved over time?
It has evolved in a couple of very distinct ways, and especially, I would say, within the last few months, one of which is reduced game intake, which is something that I've kind of had to, you know, come to grips with because I am an aficionado. I like to have those experiences. I like to be able to be in the conversation and know what's going on. So in a way, I've had to learn to care less about what's popular in gaming.
Yeah.
And so that's been part of it. Part of it is... tracking it better, you know, and becoming a little bit more cognizant of, you know, all these great games that I do have that I've never completed and trying to focus on that rather than because there's literally
to overuse that word,
no advertising that really works on me. Aside from gaming advertising, that's the one thing.
I was like, are you kidding me? E3 is just Boner Mountain.
Oh, it is.
We're and all like, on our journey up Boner Mountain.
Yeah.
Through all of
E3. And that's like my favorite thing. And that gets to me. But like, you can try to sell me chips or a cheeseburger or a cleaning solution. You can throw that stuff in my face all day. And I don't care how you try to sell it. I'm not buying it because I don't care.
Yeah.
But like, if you show me a sweet ass trailer and a cool ass mechanic with some, you know, titties ass music on it.
Yeah.
Then I'm like, oh my God, I need this. I need to go spend money on this immediately. And I think becoming immune to that and the stimulation of the conversation around it and just kind of, I guess, growing a little apathetic toward that has really been part of this journey.
Yeah.
Not to get too sentimental about it.
No, that's fine. Part of my journey, I actually don't know that much of what I've done has evolved. I think what's happened is I'm very conscious of how I am.
Mm.
That's the thing. Mm-hmm. It's like I've just kind of noticed that, like, man, I am really anal about some things. And I kind of come off, you know, not in gaming as someone who's somewhat relaxed and carefree and I don't really get hung up on much. But when it comes to my gaming habits and my collection and all that kind of stuff, like, very meticulous. And I didn't know that until I started having to talk about it.
Yeah.
And now I'm like, Jesus, am I just... Should people approach me and then within a few minutes they're like, Jesus, this guy. He's so fucking anal. He's
probably on a list that he has now.
He has 30 anuses. Like, he has to. He's so anal.
Yeah.
He's just an anal, like a spider of anuses.
And you couldn't fit dry spaghetti through any of them.
Dry? Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Whatever that means.
I don't know. I
guess they're loose or something. But no. Or tight. I don't know. Whatever. I mean, it works both ways if you think about dry spaghetti and ani. Anyway, I think that's the show.
That is the show, ladies and gentlemen.
Sorry, maybe we went a little longer than we thought.
We did. Like, we was like, all right, let's just do this. We'll trim it back to an hour. I think we're an hour and a half now. So
yeah, it was like, we'll just do backlogs. We'll be back to an hour in no time. So sorry about that.
Sorry. Thank you for sticking out. If you're here.
Held up in traffic a little longer than usual.
Yeah, hopefully your commute was absolute shit, but we made it better.
Yeah, maybe.
I mean, not hopefully. I mean, maybe it was and we made it better.
Yeah, yeah. No, hopefully it was shit and we made it better.
Exactly.
You can follow us on Twitter at TravPlaysGames.
Mm-hmm. And at the McAxel. Mm-hmm.
And together we were at Polykill only on Twitter. Facebook.com/Polykill Podcast. You can subscribe to our YouTube. It is Polykill. And we put a video of the recent off-kilter on there.
We did.
And there's a few other things on there. If you've not been there, you should fucking go there.
We should say this at the top of the show and not the end of the show.
I know.
I don't know how many people stick out.
You know, we had a fair bit of listeners, but very few watchers. So you fucking people. And then rate us on iTunes. We do like that. It's been a while since anybody's rubbed that belly, and we do like him been belly tits rubbed. And polykill.com is where we put stuff that we do and stuff like that. And stuff.
Exactly.
So thanks again for checking us out. Hopefully you like the way we're facing you on the YouTube set. It's different and fun. And we'll catch you next time.
Later. I mean, peace. Because I always say peace.